Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. It is a Football Friday all across the Sports Grid Radio Network. He is the mastermind of the pigskin. That is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. Lisi guy, we're less than a month away from the NFL draft now, less than even 4 weeks from that opening night on a late Thursday in Detroit. That is April 25th. We are continuing to see pro days around the country from the college football stars looking to make that step to the next level in the National Football League. We'll talk about what Michael Penix Jr. did yesterday in Seattle at Washington's Pro Day and what it means for the NFL draft and beyond. But, Lisi, we got a Football Friday to break down here over this next hour up until 1 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, I'm really curious, Ben, to see how these next few weeks develop for some of the other quarterbacks outside maybe the top two or three, right? A quarterback like Michael Penix, Bo Nix making his rounds as well. I'm curious to see what fit both of those guys have with respective organizations. And this is where it's all about, right? In terms of which team do you feel potentially can maybe steal the draft, right? Really increase their odds to potentially make a playoff run or, more importantly, win a division title. That's what it's all about, you know, winning a championship. So we'll see how it plays out. But you know what? I think there's about four or five quarterbacks in this class that can hit the ground running and start for respective organizations.
Yeah, it will be really interesting, Joe, to see what the quarterbacks after the presumed big three, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May, where they go. We spent a lot of yesterday's show talking about the stock that is on the rise of J.J. McCarthy. Second best price now for McCarthy to go fourth overall at plus 240. He's got the third best number to go second overall at plus 430. And to be a top five pick, McCarthy is now minus 280. It will be fascinating to see how those markets start to settle themselves as we get closer and closer to the NFL draft, because those numbers are going to change. Joe, when you look at Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr., the two veterans, if you will, both will be 24 by the time they take their first NFL snap in the National Football League. The team that is favored to draft Bo Nix is the Denver Broncos, a plus 160 price. Denver right now currently holds the 12th overall pick. The team that is favored to draft Michael Penix Jr., that's the Las Vegas Raiders at plus 380. Nix's number is closer to even money than, of course, that of Michael Penix Jr. as we welcome in that Sirius XM audience on channel 159. That's the home for Sports Grid Radio on Sirius XM. This is Football Full Circle. He is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. But plus 380, Joe, for Michael Penix Jr. to go to the Las Vegas Raiders. Right now, the Raiders have the 12th overall draft pick in the opening round. Do you think Michael Penix Jr., Joe, is a first-round pick in the 2024 NFL draft?
Yeah, absolutely I do. And he's a mobile guy as well. Could kill you with his legs. He ran a 4.5 40 yesterday, and that's what it's all about in regards to, you know, the NFL. I will say, in just terms of pure pocket passers, Michael Penix has more attempts than potentially anybody in this class, right? So that's the thing. It would just chuck it and throw. But it's not just that. You know, he has a great touch on his passes. He has great pocket awareness. He could read coverage, and his stepped up in two big games on Washington's schedule, right? Three games. Texas and the two games against Bo Nix, where he led his team from behind. That's what you want to see in regards to the Las Vegas Raiders or anybody that selects Michael Penix. He did it in Indiana with less talent and obviously got it done last year, taking Washington to a national championship appearance.
Yeah, it was what he did. What he did in the last 2 years with Kalen DeBoer and what that meant for this Huskies program that reached heights it never had previous. And I still think Michael Penix Jr., Joe, is going to be a good pro. I wonder if he is going to be a first-round pick. I truly do. I've seen some mock drafts that have him early on to the Raiders who hold an early pick in that second round, maybe making a move to go up and get a quarterback, but knowing that maybe Michael Penix Jr. is not necessarily worthy of that 13th overall selection. That's where the Raiders are right now in the first round. But again, Las Vegas with where they draft in the second round at 44th overall. Could they trade back up? Could Michael Penix Jr. fall to a team early in that second round that might need a quarterback? You wouldn't really think so, given who drafts in the first 10 or so picks of that second round. But all the things that we might see move on and change. Joe, as we look at some of the other positions, not just the quarterbacks, of course, but the first offensive lineman drafted in the National Football League draft in 2024, the first defensive player off the board, because we expect, Joe, a run of offensive stars in the first 6, 7, maybe even 8 picks. When you look at the first defensive player drafted, Dallas Turner, the edge rusher linebacker combo out of Alabama, is a pretty hefty odds on favorite, Joe, at minus 200. There is a thought with all that Atlanta has invested, not only in drafts prior, but this offseason to the offensive side of the football, that under new head coach Raheem Morris, who worries about the defensive side of the football, they are finally going to take a defensive player with that 8th overall selection, and Dallas Turner out of Alabama would then be that guy.
Yeah, Dallas Turner, I mean, a phenomenal rusher and physical. I mean, the best player on Alabama's defense, hands down. Now, is he too physical because he's been hit with a number of different, you know, personal foul type of penalties throughout his career in Tuscaloosa because of how dominant he has been as an edge rusher, can run sideline to sideline. Again, we saw this movement last year with Will Anderson. He went from 30-1 all the way down to 2-1 and gets selected third overall by the Houston Texans, right? So Alabama players translate to the NFL, especially on the defensive side of the ball as well. And I think if Atlanta needs that type of pick, it's a pretty good selection. I think it is. That's, you know, it's always intriguing in terms of team needs, right? If there's a multitude of needs and you have best available player like Dallas Turner on the defensive side of the ball and you really need to step it up defensively, that would be my pick. Jared Verse is another one out of Florida State as well. So it all comes down to team needs, Ben.
Yeah, it really does, right? And the Atlanta Falcons are really that first team, Joe, in the top 10 of the NFL draft order that you would think would focus on the defensive side of the ball. We are going to see a ton of quarterbacks in the top 10. We might see four with J.J. McCarthy included. The Arizona Cardinals, the L.A. Chargers, they could use some wide receiver help. Same for the New York Giants. If not there, maybe along the offensive line. I would expect the Titans to go O-line as well to try to protect their prized asset in Will Levis and see what they have on that side of the football under first-year head coach Brian Callahan. And by the way, the favorite to go 7th overall is Joe Alt, the outstanding offensive lineman out of Notre Dame. Second best price is Tal'Isi Fuaga, the offensive lineman out of Oregon State. Now, Alt is the hefty favorite, Joe, like Dallas Turner is, to be the first defensive player drafted to be that first O-lineman drafted, minus 250 for Alt, but Fuaga at plus 380, even in front of Olu Fashanu, who I actually think is maybe the best offensive lineman in this draft out of Penn State.
Yeah, I mean, again, Oregon State, Notre Dame, and you have Penn State, three of the most dominant rush attacks in all of college football, right? Physical at the point of attack. Again, I think Alt is the best out of that group in terms of offensive linemen. But again, you're splitting hairs. It really comes down to what the team is looking for and if players can play multiple positions, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely so. We'll have some more draft discussions on the other side of the break here on Football Full Circle to look at where teams later in the draft are looking for their first selection, what it means for their future in 2024. We do that up next, live right here on a Football Friday on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. So, Lisi, one of my favorite things about the draft markets that we have available from the odds perspective is they list a variety of teams, maybe even all 32 when all is said and done, in terms of the team's first drafted player. We'll go in alphabetical order and start at the top of this list. That's the Baltimore Ravens, who have that first posted price. Of course, the Arizona Cardinals, the Atlanta Falcons, at least in alphabetical order, draft in the top 10. So that's where you look at the overall pick selection for what those odds are down to a specific player at that specific position. But the Ravens, Joe, of course, the best record in all the National Football League in the regular season, 13-4. They have the 30th pick, the third to last in the opening round of the 2024 NFL draft. And they are favored to draft an offensive lineman at minus 160 to help protect and keep Lamar Jackson upright.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know if I agree with that, Ben. I understand the mentality, right? But they had one of the best rushing attacks in all of the NFL, and part of that was Lamar Jackson's versatility and athleticism. The other part was how dominant the offensive line was. Now, they weren't dominant against the Kansas City Chiefs front seven in terms of the playoff loss, but still, I think they're pretty good and set at offensive linemen. I wouldn't waste a 30th overall selection on an O-lineman. They need more depth at the wide receiver position. I know Zay Flowers is legit and stepped up, but outside of that, they've been inconsistent. I know they had Likely and Bateman, but they're not anywhere near, in my opinion, to a top elite wide receiver core. And even though the offseason moves that they've made, they could still add some depth if Roma Duse or another wide receiver is lurking there at 30th overall at +470, that's a viable option for me.
Yeah, I don't think Roma Dunze is going to fall that far in this first round all the way to 30. I don't think a lot of these wide receivers are going to fall all that far either. Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, Brian Thomas Jr. I really think all those guys are probably top 20. Maybe a Xavier Worthy, but is his makeup a little bit like what we would see for a Zay Flowers? I agree, though, Joe. The Ravens have hardly ever invested into the wide receiver position for Lamar Jackson. They did draft Zay Flowers, of course, in the opening round a year ago, but there hasn't been a ton in terms of what the receiver position has looked like in Baltimore during Lamar's time. You would think, though, there's also that investment from the offensive line perspective, and there's some really good O-linemen in this draft. When you look at the names that we shared to start, Joe Alt, Talisa Fuaga as well, Olufoshanu, Troy Fautanu from Washington as well. There's a lot of really good talent that I think, because there's not necessarily a priority on O-linemen, at least early in the draft, as we see oftentimes throughout the years, you're going to have some guys lurking later on in the opening round. Amarius Mims, who is gigantic out of Georgia. I think he's 6'8", 375. That's another name to pay attention to. There are a lot of big guys that I think, Joe, could really make some difference at the end of the opening round.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, you talk about depth, and you brought up a lot of these guys from the offensive line that can plug and play. I mean, that is the biggest thing. You want offensive linemen that you could come in and plug and play immediately, and that's all that matters, especially when you have a run-heavy type of offense. Yeah. You look at some of the other, you know, defensive edge rushers. They lose Patrick Queen. Could they go linebacker? They're always big on linebacker for Baltimore. It's a 40-1 shot. You know, I don't think they go safety because they drafted Hamilton last year, you know, in the first round. But linebacker, maybe you want to take a shot. I mean, 40-1, Ben. I mean, it's first selection, right? So it's not, if they trade out, let's just say they get a deal to get multiple picks in the second round. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it can. Right. They could take a shot on a linebacker, 40-1. I mean, we know how they love defense. So you're losing Queen. It's not a bad option to just pull the trigger there.
Yeah, not a bad idea either, and you would think there are going to be some sort of moves. The Buffalo Bills, Joe, draft 28th overall in that opening round. The fifth to last pick of those first 32. And the Bills are favored to take a wide receiver. Of course, Gabe Davis, not there any longer. We'll see about Stephon Diggs' future in Western New York. A lot of changeover from this roster for Buffalo in the last few weeks after free agency began. And a wide receiver that is also favored to go to the Buffalo Bills at a 5-1 price, still relatively long, is Xavier Worthy, the speedster out of Texas who ran a 4-2-1 40-yard dash, the fastest ever in the history of the NFL scouting combine. And they asked him in Indy, Joe, where do you think that you would want to play? And he said Kansas City. I look at Tyreek Hill. I look at what he did in that Chiefs offense. I think it'd make a lot of sense. But then the Chiefs went out there and got Hollywood Brown during this offseason already. The Chiefs were favored to draft Worthy. Now they are tied for the third best price at 9-1. The Buffalo Bills, the favorites. Do you think a wide receiver to add to the offensive arsenal for Josh Allen makes sense for Buffalo?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, right? Because the inconsistency with Gabe Davis, 1 week up, 1 week down, there were glimpses of what you saw in terms of the playoff performance a couple of years ago. Yeah, I think it's a good fit. And you can't, when you have a guy that could burn, right, 4-2-1, that's what it takes to run off the opposing secondary and open up the rushing attack, not just for the running backs, but Josh Allen as well. And then you have Diggs there for now. You know, we'll see how that situation develops over the next few months, but you know, Xavier Worthy's a really nice option, especially when you have two tight ends in Dalton Kincaid and still Dawson Knox that can obviously, you know, work over the middle, right? He doesn't have to do dirty work, so you just put him out there, fly, post, and catch the football. Now, he has struggled with some drops in his career. How will the cold weather affect Xavier Worthy? I guess only time will tell, Ben.
Yeah, we'll see exactly how that plays out. But Buffalo, the favorite to draft him right now. The Panthers, the second best number at 8-1. Of course, Carolina does not have a first round pick in the 2024 NFL draft. They have the first pick, though, of the second round, 33rd overall. As we keep looking at a couple of what these teams might do in the first drafted player that they make, the Carolina Panthers do have a wide receiver as the favorite at plus 130. I wonder what they do in terms of what they get for Bryce Young. I would also think offensive lineman makes a ton of sense at plus 650. I think the Carolina Panthers, Joe, need to add a lot right now to this team in 2024. We talked about it. The Panthers don't have a win total posted for whatever reason, which we both find rather peculiar on the FanDuel Sportsbook. They have the longest price in a very large way at 30-1 to win next year's Super Bowl, nearly double the second longest price, which is the Pats at 170-1. Dave Canales in his rookie year as a head coach, not much is expected, and there's a lot of positions of needs across this Carolina roster.
Yeah, there are, right? So, like, you know, we know he's going to go offense, right? Does he go offensive lineman, though, to protect Bryce Young? I wouldn't do that, but that's something that jumps off the page, right? Plus 650. I think they need 3, 4, 5 wide receivers to help out Bryce Young. You cannot expect Adam Thielen to be your number one option. He's a secondary option at best at this late in his career. Now, he stepped up in big games and became the leading receiver, but you need a guy that can really be that go-to, a Brian Thomas type big body wide receiver, and then you could have the secondary guys work over, you know, in terms of the flat or underneath, right? That's what you want to see, but it's a major rebuild. I think Canales will overachieve this year because I like what he did with Baker Mayfield in Tampa Bay, but it is contingent on the success and progression of Bryce Young. The only way he can develop, Ben, is if he has options and checkdowns to go to, something that Frank Reich and that staff did not allow him last year.
Yeah, it is really interesting, right? How much of a blame is that on Frank Reich? What exactly were the inner workings in Charlotte? That I'm not sure we will ever truly know. So as we go around here on a Football Friday on Football Full Circle, we'll keep some draft discussions going, but also turn our attention to college football. It's quiet right now in collegiate athletics. So what exactly does that mean for CFB? Not for college athletics overall, of course, with the NCAA tournaments playing out, but in college football. We'll talk about it up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. So, Lisi guy, let's talk a little college football. We don't get enough chances, you and I, to talk some college football. It's our favorite thing to do. We are very far away, of course, from a college football season truly beginning, but most programs around the country already underway in spring practice. Some have already finished up. Some, it's the very early going. But, Lisi, I want to talk to you about something even bigger than that. Earlier this week, there's been a lot of sports betting investigations that have taken place now that legalized sports gambling is legal in many areas in many states of this country. There's been a lot tied into prop bets and the effect that we have seen for that. In the NBA, Jonte Porter is now under investigation for peculiar movements in his individual prop bets. NCAA President Joe Charlie Baker said earlier this week that the NCAA is working with sportsbook operators across various legalized sports gambling states to try to put a nationwide ban on college sports prop bets. So all those prop bets on the individuals, a quarterback to throw for over 280 and a half passing yards, a basketball player to score more than 12 and a half points, whatever that prop bet might be, trying to get it taken down from sportsbook operators. Now, in certain states, like I live in New York, you can't bet college prop bets, but we do our shows, Joe, for CFT, College Football Today, live in New Jersey. That's where you can see all the prop bets and place wagers on them. What did you make, Joe, of Charlie Baker strategy, or at least what the NCAA is trying to do in banning player prop bets?
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting because the NCAA decides to get involved in this, and they still can't get their heads wrapped around the NIL situation that potentially is affecting everything, you know, in regards to just players, the transfer portal, and everything else. That aside, though, I believe that this potentially does have legs, Ben, because, you know, when you have NBA players coming out and saying that, you know, fans heckle them and that it affects them, it's only going to, you know, protect student athletes. The only way they could do that is say, you know what, let's not have it. You know, we'll take it away and then let's see and see if it helps and the player's mental state. That's what it's all about. The fact that student athletes are going to college to learn and play the game of football, even though some universities, you know, pay and it's been going on for a while, they are student athletes. They don't necessarily need to be open to all the criticism and harassment. So I think the NCAA is making a decision to get ahead of it in this particular niche when they should have been worried about the whole thing about 4 or 5 years ago when this all hit the fan back in 2018.
Yeah, so I just have a couple of things to say when it comes to all of these investigations, whether it's in a professional sports league or tied to anything we have seen in collegiate sports. When it comes to legalized sports wagering, part of the reason that was once taboo and behind the scenes is now shed light on is because it is legal, because you can track it. You can pinpoint this data down to a physical location right then and there, an exact location. So if somebody goes on to their favorite sportsbook operator on their phone in that approved and legalized sports wagering app or online platform, if I place a bet that is flagged for whatever reason, for improper behavior, for uncertainty, whatever it might be, they can track it and follow that data down to a minuscule point. If you get rid or you are scared of legalized sports wagering, it makes the taboo amplified, where it is not as easy to track, where it is not as easy to detect, where it is not nearly as easy then to punish nor discipline. It is just part of what we are seeing here, and it is the growing stages of what has now become largely legalized nationally. Of course, some big states have still yet to pull the trigger on legalizing online sports wagering. But when it's a focus on prop betting, I find that interesting as well because that ties directly into the individual. If somebody, I guess the idea is, knows what their prop is and wants to benefit off of it, then it's easier to impact that outcome than it is the overall game. With that being said, though, Joe, we're talking about an individual that would probably partake in that action either which way. And I would say, Joe, that then again, you are not allowed to, in a professional sport, in a collegiate sport, bet on any activity of which you partake, oftentimes not even the same sport, in the same league. And that all ties to it being legalized and easier to track. So I don't necessarily agree with the NCAA's new idea that they want to get college player prop bets banned from sportsbook operators nationwide. For me, personally, it would be a bummer. Most of my college football bets during a regular season, Joe, as you know, are with a focus on player props. So I wouldn't enjoy it. From a content perspective, it would not be as fun to break down the game matchups, to detail this quarterback comparison between this QB and that QB, to highlight what a running back is doing and can he go over a yardage prop again, what this wide receiver's numbers look like, all correlated to the stats and performance. You just associate an actionable commodity on it, aka an over-under for a yardage prop and a prop bet. So it'd be a bummer from the content and betting perspective. I wonder if it will happen. I wonder if the sportsbook operators are going to say, you know what, we don't get enough attention into college player prop bets. They're already not legal in some sports or unbettable in some states. So maybe we just let it go and, be amenable to the NCAA in this area. I wonder what is next.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I agree with you. We have great content each and every Saturday during college football, talking props, watching games, right, and seeing how these outcomes play out, and in-game perspective as well. Look at, yeah, you know, our coverage of the national championship game. The game was dead and buried, but we were still betting on props and talking about the wide receivers for Washington and even Michigan, respectively. So it takes away from the gambling perspective. I agree with you. And again, do I think it's right? No, I'm with you. I think the NCAA is completely just in disarray. They don't know exactly what they're doing. They're trying to do something to show that they actually have control of a specific situation, when ultimately they don't. Because, okay, so the books in the states don't have it, let's just say. But what about offshore? What about illegal bookmakers? You don't think that's going to pop up? And all of a sudden that, you know, a bag of cash potentially can't go from an illegal bookmaker to a college athlete and affect the game? You know how I know? Because we had it with Boston College. We had it with other schools and universities previously. Why they feel doing this is gonna change everything is ridiculous. But the problem is, Ben, when you just don't have NCAA players and college players coming out, when you have the professional athletes say, yeah, it's a problem, then the microscope goes on the college players first and foremost, right?
Yeah,
right. These guys are getting $100 million, and they're complaining about being heckled. So you know what? Let's fix it for the college kids.
Yeah, it's a really good point, Lizzie Guy, and that is all a part of it, right? What we are seeing throughout the sports landscape and how it all, you know, deals with sports wagering that is legal is now trickling its way down into college. And I agree with your point as well. The NCAA is trying to take action, right? They are trying to do something, because in the big changes that have come to their sports landscape in the last few years, they have sat back and done absolutely nothing and watched the NIL market, watched the transfer portal get completely off the rails with zero guidelines or restrictions or even policies put in place by the governing body that is the NCAA as an organization to try to put up guardrails for these very things. I think they are now trying to make a statement based on what they are seeing and not let it affect the purity that they believe college sports is. I think when you look at the reality, though, it's the same thing. And again, it all ties back to the idea, and a lot of people look at sports wagering now that it's online, and they're seeing these things that come up, like Calvin Ridley getting suspended and so on and so forth, and what we have seen throughout the, you know, pro leagues partnering with sportsbook operators and all that stuff. They're like, whoa, this is a lot. This is overwhelming. It's already happened. It's just now out in front where it's not behind the scenes in the dark webs anymore.
No, and that's what it is. But isn't that good? That's good,
yeah,
you know, that
so.
We have a track. I agree. You know, everything is on the up and up when you go through a bookmaker. You have to put the money in to the account. You have to lay out the money before you get paid out. So everything is transparent. That is the whole reason why that the push for legalized sports gambling on top of the revenue that it drives. We know that gambling's not going anywhere, whether it be legalized or not. It was always there. For decades and, you know, for 100 years. So it's how you make everything transparent so that you don't have these irregularities where you don't have players come out. But the problem, Ben, comes down to this. You know, you say you start at the top and it rolls downhill, right? It's always the head and everything else. If NFL players were betting on games and doing things that they weren't supposed to, you don't believe that that's going to trickle into college now? Is that the norm? No, that's not the norm. Right. That's more like the 3% or the outlier in the NFL right. and the college. Are you going to have these incidents? Absolutely. But guess what? You've had these incidents throughout the course of time for the college football and the NCAA. You want to show that you're in charge because you don't want to be like the Pac-12, non-existent and dissolved. You still want to have jobs and they still want to collect. So they want to do something proactive as opposed to sitting back.
Yeah, it's a really good point, Joe, right? And we see it in the professional leagues. What's to think it wouldn't happen in college sports? But you made a great point right there. The outlier. I would say it's less than 3%. It's probably 1%, if even that. But we highlight the things that are the inaccuracies that we see. We'll talk a little college football into 2024's campaign up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle, it is FFC. It is never, and I mean never too early to talk a little college football for 2024. Joe, we are seeing the end of the NCAA tournament. We're into Sweet 16 Friday, the second weekend of both the men's and the women's big dance. After that, we're going to have some college baseball, no doubt about it. We're going to get to the College World Series, the Women's College World Series on the softball diamond as well. But then the summer months will quickly be here. It'll be fall camp. It'll be the Saturdays in the fall. It'll be college football season once again. It is funny how time flies. Lisi, when you look at 2024 college football's landscape, so many changes come our way. First and foremost, the expanded college football playoff format, 2-12 teams. Of course, it is the 5+7 model, the 5 highest ranked conference champions, 7 at-large berths, with 4 power conferences remaining with the dissolution of the Pac-12. We will see the ACC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the SEC champion get a bid, and then it will be the highest ranked non-Power 4 conference champ. And then we will see 7 at-larges. We will also see all of this change because of conference realignment. The Big Ten now has 18 teams. The SEC now has 16 teams. The Big 12 now has 16 teams as well. The ACC remains at 14, and the Pac-12 is no longer. Joe, when will that set in for you, do you think, that this college football season is going to look very different than the ones we have seen over the past 10, 15 years?
I think over the summer, Ben, you know, when we really dive into all the, you know, the specifics, the roster changes and all of the numbers, you know, it's a year-round type of process. The problem is with the transfer portal and how some of these players take late jumps that, you know, it's no longer the schedule anymore. I mean, that's a huge part of college football, but you have margin of error this year. And you know how I know? I don't need to look very far. I've told you this. Look at the odds, right? Georgia +3 to one to win it all. You scroll down all the way basically to 30 teams. Utah at 70-1 to win it all. That is a far cry from what we had. We used to have 8 to 10 teams, maybe under 50 to one, right? 100 to one. Now you have 30. Which tells you, guess what? The books are not going to provide that type of value for some of these Power 5 teams, right? Especially from the Big Ten and SEC, respectively, when you know that they have the strength of schedule, where if they're a 10-2, let's just throw 10-2 Tennessee team, right, that knocked off Georgia or whatever, right, and they have two losses. Well, guess what? They're in the dance before anybody else because of the strength of schedule and how these teams play. So they have value where before they were, lose one, you're out. You go from 15 to 1 to 150 to 1 because you have to get back in it. Not anymore.
Yeah, Joe, I remember last year, and I'm pretty sure I have this number correct, and I think you know it as well. USC had the fifth or sixth best price to win the national championship entering 2023, and the number was 25 to 1. That was the sixth best number to win a national title. At 25 to 1. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 teams at 22 to 1 or better. So you're really expanding that by double. And there are so many more opportunities to get in to the college football playoff. It is what, in my estimation, makes the regular season more exciting. Some will say it de-incentivizes the regular season. I would disagree with that sentiment. Because when you lose two games, if you lose two games, you're not thinking about what game you're going to play in for a bowl near New Year's Day. You could still be playing into the college football playoff. That's a beautiful thing. It keeps things more exciting into the late weeks of November and, of course, into early December for a conference championship. We're worrying about a 14-team college football playoff expansion as we move forward into different eras of the sport, but at least we know in 2024 it's 12 teams and it is this expanded conference realignment that we are dealing with. But again, Joe, I mentioned those 10 teams at 22 to 1 or shorter to win a national championship. The only team that is not in either the Big Ten or the SEC of those 10 best prices is Notre Dame. They're independent. The Irish at plus 2,200 right alongside Penn State. The first team outside of the power conferences that plays in a league, that's Florida State at 28 to 1 and Clemson at 30 to 1. Again, it should show you of this new expanded college football playoff, how many of the at-large bids, at least according to the odds makers and the overall prospect and outlook for 2024, probably find their way into what we will deem the power two, the Big Ten and the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. You brought up great points. I mean, Notre Dame is the one outlier because they're an independent, and they have been there in terms of the college football playoff, and Marcus Freeman and that team potentially can crack the party at 22 to 1. You're right. What I'm amazed about, and obviously Riley Leonard, the new quarterback taking over from Sam Hartman, helps that, you know, you have a veteran. There's no significant drop-off after Hartman goes to the NFL. But, I mean, Michigan, right? 17 to 1. Now, part of that is Harbaugh and the fact that McCarthy and the crew move on. But 17 to 1. If this was Georgia, right, they'd be right there in terms of the top four. Kalen DeBoer in Alabama, 13 to 1. When have you seen Alabama 13 to 1 to potentially win a national championship, right? I mean, it's amazing. Texas, Oregon, first years in the conferences, they're ahead of the usual suspects. LSU, Ole Miss. I mean, it's amazing when you think about how they're priced right now.
Yeah, it's a really good point, Joe. When was the last time we saw Alabama at 13-1 and not three digits to win a national championship before a college football season even began? I don't know if I could tell you. I don't know if it's ever happened since they posted
odds. It might have been like 2010 because they won the national championship. I'm just going to assume that they, you know, maybe they were, maybe because they lost everybody that they never thought Nick would reload, you know, that quickly. I mean, yeah. You know, I mean, think about it. I mean, because if this is Georgia, right, Georgia didn't even make the college football playoff last year, and they're still the front runners, right? So to have Alabama 13 to 1 just shows you how they value the schedule, how they value the coaching change, how they value the attrition in terms of the transfer portal. The book is saying, guess what? We believe that Texas and Oregon and Ohio State are much better than Alabama right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a good point. It's been at least a decade, if not more than that. And I wonder, Joe, if Nick Saban remained, right? No shot at Kalen DeBoer, but if Nick Saban remained in Tuscaloosa, would it be 13-1? My guess is no, right? A 10-1 price. Yep. I think some of it, of course, is the new landscape of college football, of the SEC. I think a lot of it has to do with Kalen DeBoer filling in the very, very large shoes of the greatest college football coach we've ever seen in Nick Saban, right? And all the changes that are coming in Tuscaloosa to the offensive staff under DeBoer. We thought it was going to be Ryan Grubb. It's not. He's now the new offensive coordinator in Seattle. Not for the Washington Huskies still, but for the Seahawks in the National Football League. Of course, you still have Jalen Milroe back there as the quarterback. You're going to have so much talent around him throughout this team, but there was some attrition from Alabama in terms of what they lost in the wide receiver room as well. Caleb Downs left, who was an all-SEC player, yep. SEC Freshman of the Year for the Crimson Tide. He's now at Ohio State. There was a lot of attrition because of the coaching changes in Tuscaloosa, and I think more than anything, Joe, that's probably why the number is 13-1. Alabama's win total is 9.5. That, I think, is a direct tie to the competition level stepping up in the SEC, just given you add Texas, you add Oklahoma, you're going to have no divisions anymore, although the SEC West, at least the last few years, has been more competitive than the SEC East. But Alabama plays Georgia the first time in a regular season in a very long time. So you have Alabama with a 9.5 win total, Joe, where the under is minus 138. If you were to walk into Tuscaloosa right now and yell out loud on a megaphone, Alabama, you're winning 9 games this year, you might be punched in the face almost instantaneously. But the idea, Joe, that Alabama could win 9 games does not rule them out from a college football playoff position. And that's one of the keys here as we get ready for 2024.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know how long the fan base and boosters will accept 9-3, though. You know, it's not going to be easy. Mm-hmm. When you, it's not, Ben. They have Georgia. They have,
of course not.
They have obviously LSU and Ole Miss, and you know, it's Tennessee that's up and coming. It's not going to be easy with a first-year head coach, even one of the better head coaches in college football, in Kalen DeBoer. So, yeah, that's what you want, right? You want these teams that, and we used to criticize, you know, teams not playing these dominant, you know, top 25 battles like we're going to see this year, right? USC and LSU. We have some great matchups. Florida State takes on some players. Georgia, I mean, you know, it used to be where those teams, whoever lost, was on the outside looking in immediately. They had so much uphill work to do to get back into the race. Now they don't, right? Because you lose one of these early games in September or October, there's always margin of error if you run the table. That's what you want, a second opportunity, a rebirth. And they have that now with the new format.
Yeah, and they do. And that's certainly going to be a part of it, Joe. When you talk about Alabama and their football history, right, the last time they won less than double-digit games was Nick Saban's first year in Tuscaloosa back in 2007. They went 7-6. The year prior, though, they had a losing record, 6-7, after they fired Mike Shula and lost in the Independence Bowl. They were 10-2 the year prior. They were an even 500 at 6-6 the year before that. They were 4-9 in Mike Shula's first year. There were some pretty dismal years there for Alabama in the decade before Nick Saban took over. They had 1, 2, 3, 4 losing seasons in a decade. That's crazy to think. Crazy to think that Alabama could have a losing season, let alone multiple in a decade span. Of course, they have not had a losing season the last 17 years. That was all under Nick Saban. I don't expect them to have a losing season. And Kalen DeBoer is a winner, man. Kalen DeBoer is a great head coach at every level he has been. He probably has not been under the scrutiny quite that he will be in Tuscaloosa. But I do think Alabama gets to at least 9 wins. I would not be surprised, Joe, to see Alabama at double-digit wins, even with what they have lost attrition-wise in their schedule and in their roster. The schedule for Alabama is interesting. They go to Camp Randall middle of September to take on Wisconsin. Then they have a week off after that, and they open up SEC play in Bryant Denny against Georgia. They visit Tennessee in Knoxville. They host Missouri. They have LSU on the road. They go to Norman to take on Oklahoma. The schedule is difficult, and more than anything, Nick Saban or Kalen DeBoer, Joe, that's why I think the win total is 9.5 in this reimagined landscape of college football. But again, it's a pretty difficult gauntlet for a very talented Alabama team that will be looked to prove itself this year, unlike they really have in years prior.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an uphill battle. If I had a bet right now, that number, I would take an under. I would, and I know it sounds crazy, but I think LSU with Brian Kelly, I think Ole Miss with Jackson Dart and Lane Kiffin, they're much more consistent. I would need to see it out of Jalen Milroe with Kalen DeBoer and those talent around him. I need to see that play out before I would do a preseason bet on Alabama over the 9.5, right? So if I'm not betting it, but if I had to right here, right now, I would lean on the under, yeah. Ben.
Milroe 15-1 to win the Heisman Trophy this year, tied alongside a couple of other SEC quarterbacks. Nico Iamaleava, the quarterback for Tennessee, Jackson Dart, the quarterback for Ole Miss, both at 15-1. Again, tied for the fifth best number. The quarterbacks in front, Quinn Ewers, Carson Beck, co-favorites, plus 750. Dylan Gabriel now at Oregon, and Will Howard now at Ohio State. We'll look at the Heisman Trophy odds up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on FFC, it's Football Full Circle. The Heisman Trophy is not going to be decided to the second Saturday of December, but Joe Lisi and I will look at those Heisman Trophy odds right now. Quinn Ewers and Carson Beck, the co-favorites, show at plus 750. Ewers back for Texas, an incredibly talented wide receiver room under Steve Sarkisian in Austin this year. And Beck, of course, back for Georgia as well. Dylan Gabriel, the new quarterback at Oregon, 10-1. Will Howard, the new quarterback at Ohio State, 12-1. A lot of talent back for both of those guys, respectively. And as we said, Nico Iamaleava, the quarterback for Tennessee, 15-1. Jalen Milroe, 15-1. Jackson Dart, 15-1. Tied for the fifth best price. Joe, if you had to make a Heisman Trophy bet right now, here on this last Friday in December, or in March, as I'm thinking about December, who would that Heisman Trophy bet be?
I'm going to shock you. I would take a shot on Jackson Dart. I really like Jackson Dart this year. 15-1. I think it has great value. I know he struggled against Alabama last year, but I believe in Lane Kiffin. I believe in Ole Miss. I like what they have. They dominated Penn State, and he has one of his top two wide receivers coming back. If not, I think there's top three coming back. They're going to be loaded. And what they did in terms of the transfer portal, I love Jackson Dart. Don't be shocked if he leads the SEC in terms of touchdown passes this year.
I would not. They are going to fire away in Ole Miss. I think one of the winners so far of the transfer portal entering this new college football season, that would be Lane Kiffin and the Running Rebs. If I had to place a bet on the Heisman Trophy at this moment, I go down the board a little bit. And I look at a young man by the name of Jackson Arnold for Oklahoma, a 25-1 price. I think he's going to do some sensational things this year. I don't know if Will Howard's that guy at Ohio State, but he's got a lot of pieces at his disposal and a new offensive coordinator in Columbus, in Chip Kelly, to help him figure it all out. He's Joe Lisi. I'm Ben Stevens. We'll talk to you tomorrow, but on Sports Grid's Bracket Central for Elite Eight Saturday night at the NCAA tournament. Lisi, talk to you then. We'll talk to you on Football Full Circle on Monday, noon Eastern. Have a good weekend.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.